But first, whether it's the war in Afghanistan or military veterans returning from the war zone, the U.S. military has its hands full and is dealing with a complex array of issues. It's something that sometimes is misunderstood by the civilian world. To find out how military officials are responding and managing to these issues, I'm joined by Major General Stephen Lanza, the Chief of Public Affairs for the U.S. Army, joins us from the Pentagon. General Lanza, thanks for joining us this evening.
Thanks for having me on your show. It's great to be with you.
Now, from what I understand, you went to school at Central Michigan University?
I have my graduate degree from Central Michigan University and public administration. That's exactly correct. Yes. And a proud graduate.
Now, did you grow up in Michigan?
No, I grew up in New York, actually.
I see. Ended up coming here for school. Well, certainly a good institution. So let's talk about what's happening in Afghanistan. 22% of active duty Army troops are now at least on their third tour of duty at a war zone. Sergeant Robert Bales, who allegedly carried out this shooting rampage that left 17 Afghan civilians dead, was one of those soldiers. Are these repeated deployments pushing soldiers to the edge?
Well, I think what I would first say is, first of all, about the shooting is just the fact that this is a tragic incident. And I would say, first of all, that my hearts go out to the victims and the family members that suffered this tragedy. I think what I would suggest is, based on that shooting, it certainly does not reflect the service and sacrifice of over the 100,000 soldiers and NATO members that are conducting that mission in Afghanistan, as well as the over 300,000 members of the Afghan security forces that are doing that. And it really doesn't reflect the values of our soldiers and the values that we have in the Army for our expectations of what honorable service is.
Well, how many tour of duties is enough? I mean, at what point should a soldier be allowed to say, I don't want to go, and then he basically can avoid it another time in the battlefield?
That's a great question. We have tens of thousands of soldiers with multiple deployments. I mean, I myself have multiple deployments to Iraq, and there's really no exact science to say, you know, what the impact is on an individual for multiple deployments. We have soldiers that have served multiple deployments that have had no issues. We've had soldiers that have had one deployment or a short deployment that have had issues. And the exact science of how you do this is really not clear. What we're trying to coach our soldiers on and what we're working them on is resiliency skills. Resiliency skills on how they can adapt to multiple deployments, because as long as you have these missions, there are certain military operational specialties that are going to have to continue to go back to conduct the business that the nation has asked us to do.
Now, Bales' lawyers said that after he was deployed to Iraq three times, he was sent to Afghanistan against his will. How does the Army handle this kind of situation, and do soldiers have any way to argue against repeated deployment?
You know, I can't really comment on the case itself, and I think the comments by Mr. Brown will come to fruition here as we see the case develop. What I can tell you here is there's no other institution that does more pre-deployment and post-deployment screening for our soldiers than the United States Army, and we have the best system to do that. I think the science of the brain is still not as accurate as we would like it to be, and we look for all measures right now to really get our arms around this. The key issue is to reduce the stigma, to make sure that our soldiers come forward to let us know if they're experiencing challenges or if they're having problems. And breaking down that stigma is really the key here to successful understanding of some of the mental or behavioral health challenges that affect our soldiers.
So a soldier that tells the Army that, look, I cannot handle another deployment, is that wish somehow honored?
The wish is certainly explored by our mental health professionals, and if indeed a soldier had instances of behavioral issues or mental health issues, those would be noted on a pre-deployment screening, and then the appropriate medical professionals would look at that. We have had instances where soldiers have a variety of reasons where they are non-deployable and do not go on deployment if indeed they're certified as non-deployable.
Now, the war in Afghanistan is now the longest war in U.S. history. What do you think about the fact that many Americans have stopped paying attention to this war, and unless there are casualties, it is rarely discussed in the news?
It is, and I think that's unfortunate because we do have so many soldiers right now that are serving selfishly in terms of what we've been asked to do to support the nation of Afghanistan. I think right now, you know, the fundamental strategy of what we are trying to do there has not changed, and we'll continue to partner with the Afghans and the Afghan government to create a better quality of life there as our mission continues to draw down.
Is the Army looking forward to this war being declared over soon?
the Army is an institution that will continue to answer the needs of the country. We have shown successfully that we're the most adaptable and flexible military that this nation has ever known, and the ability to conduct operations simultaneously in Iraq and Afghanistan. So the military will always be prepared to answer the call to duty, whatever our nation asks us to do.
I'm talking to Major General Stephen Lanza, the Chief of Public Affairs for the U.S. Army. Some have said that we have an amazing army that's not being used properly. We're taking a military stance in situations that we maybe should be taking a different approach and not necessarily using our military. Do you think there's any truth to that?
Like any other military, we need to be prepared for a full range of military operations. And one of the great things about the United States Army is that we can do a variety of things that enable our country to meet the needs in terms of what the president has asked us to do. So whether it be high-intensity conflict, whether it be humanitarian assistance, the United States military is really trained for that range of military operations. And as we go through these budget cuts, the key will be a military that is trained and ready, whatever size military we have at the end of this budget discussion.
Well, let's talk about the returning veterans. The unemployment rate for Iraq and Afghanistan vets is coming down, although a recent federal report said the unemployment rate for those who served in Iraq and Afghanistan averaged over 12% during 2011. That's versus over 8% for the overall population. Do you think employers have some kind of a negative bias towards returning veterans for any reason?
I don't think so. You know, I just got back from New York and met with a group called Veterans of Wall Street. And here's a group of former military professionals that have bonded together on Wall Street to make sure that they have programs in place for veterans to be hired. I was at the U.S. Chamber of Commerce the other day with over 3,000 chambers of commerce across the United States that are looking for job fairs to hire our veterans. There's a website established called Heroes to Hire for Jobs. So I don't think that's the case. And I think given the opportunity that the veterans of the United States military, and that's all services, provide the skill sets, the integrity, and the character that our businesses and industry are looking for.
So why is the veteran unemployment rate so much higher than the overall population?
I think part of it is the initial transition in some cases and the willingness in some cases of industry to make sure that we match the skill sets of our soldiers with the needs of industry or the needs of business. And I think the more that we build on the relationships and the more that we show the more we can show where there are job fairs or where there are issues where we can move the two institutions together, I think that really starts helping work through the problem.
Well, we do hear a lot about PTSD and other negative psychological effects of being in a war zone. Would it be fair to say that for anyone that has been in that situation, coming back, dealing with civilian life is going to be more difficult and complicated?
I think the key is the reintegration, and as I discussed earlier, the resiliency of our soldiers. We go through a fairly extensive reintegration program when we come back from a combat zone, and every individual reacts differently. But as I said earlier, there's tens of thousands of soldiers that have returned from Iraq and Afghanistan that have successfully transitioned into civilian life. We have deployed over 1 million soldiers in this country to both theaters of war here over the last 10 years. So I wouldn't take it that we've had a significant issue. I would say obviously there could be challenges in some instances, but overall we've shown a tremendous amount of success in being able to transition our soldiers to civilian life.
Now, when it comes to the defense budget, I know the defense secretary has asked for an audit to be completed by 2014. The numbers aren't fully clear. Some say it's 50% of our federal budget. The government says it's 17-20% of the budget. I do want to ask you, though, about the spending we're doing. When you look at private military contractors that some have said have profited and maybe even fueled some of our decisions to engage our military, is there some truth to that? As a general, what's your view of having private contractors on the battlefield?
I think, first of all, there's a need for private contracting. If you look in your question earlier about the numbers of deployments that you have for U.S. soldiers, without the ability of private contractors, we would actually have more people committed and less time at home station. What we've tried to do here over the last 10 years is ensure that for every year you have in a combat zone, you have 2 years at home station with your family. And I would say with the size of the force we've had and the missions we've had in two theaters of war, that without some of the private contracting firms, we would have actually spent more time in a combat zone and less time at home with our families.
But what about the fact that they have a financial incentive to have a military operation be engaged and continued?
as I said earlier, I think there's the need for that. And if there are any discrepancies, I mean, those are issues where the inspector generals of the different services and Department of Defense have looked at those. And I think overall, most of the contractors have handled themselves extremely well. Where there are instances where there's been some cases of fraud, and you note some of those, that they've been investigated and those that have been responsible have been held accountable.
One last question. We're now out of Iraq. Things there appear to be certainly far from stable. We see still these bombings, suicide bombings against civilians. What do you make of the fact that, you know, we've left Iraq and we've kind of left them back to their own reality? And do you think we could very well see the same thing happen in Afghanistan?
I think the reality of Iraq is that after years of warfare there, we've given the Maliki government perhaps an opportunity to move forward. And I don't think we'll know in the next year or so, and it could perhaps be as long as 10 years before we know, you know, how successful we've been to give the Maliki government an opportunity for a democrat and sovereign Iraq. So we'll see where this goes. But what I can tell you, having just left Iraq, you know, a little over a year ago, is that the sacrifice of our military there has, again, given them that opportunity. So hopefully we'll see a return on the investment, but I think the Maliki government has an opportunity, and I would suggest that our continued partnership with Iraq is going to be necessary to help that country move forward.
Major General Stephen Lanza, the Chief of Public Affairs for the U.S. Army. General Lanza, thank you very much for joining us this evening.
It's my pleasure, and I just want to thank all your listeners for their support for our brave men and women and their families. So thank you very much.